Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell. I'm delighted to be sitting across from Rachel Johns to talk about her new book, The Greatest Gift. Welcome, Rachel.
Hi, John. Thank you.
Now, we meet quite regularly now.
Yeah, it's nice.
Your output is extraordinary. How do you keep up with the volume of wonderful work that you're producing?
I'll let you into a little secret. It's slowing down. I think the more... The last couple of years have been a bit crazy, so I have slowed down this year. Before then, I don't know. I look back and I go, you know, I wrote with young kids and I'm not actually sure. I think it's a case of just sitting down and writing pretty much, you know, regularly. There's no secret. It's just I guess I was quite a fast writer in the early days.
Concepts and ideas and stuff, are they just flooding through?
No, I'm not one of those writers that has a million ideas. I lie in bed stressing, oh my gosh, what am I going to write next? What if I never come up with another book idea? But luckily, some sort of magic, I don't know, just it's usually halfway through the current book or just towards the end of the current book when I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what am I going to write next? Something will just come. So I hope that, you know, that just continues. Actually, this book, I was going to take a break and I was pretty much going to have 6 months off. We were renovating our house, we'd moved, and I was feeling that, about 20 books in, I think, 5 or 6 years was starting to... I mean, some of them are quite short.
Yeah.
But I thought, you know, I was feeling a little bit like I needed a break. And then that happened. An idea just suddenly came from nowhere and I was like, okay, nope, I'm not having a break.
That's one of your techniques is to go, I'm not going to do it. Oh.
Yes. And I think it does work, actually. Sometimes just giving yourself a permission to take the pressure off. That's happened a couple of times with some of my smaller novellas. I've said to the publisher, no, actually, I don't have time to write that. And then I have given myself that permission, and within 2 weeks an idea has come and I've wanted to, you know, write it, and I have.
So The Greatest Gift, can you give us a bit of a rundown of what The Greatest Gift's all about?
Sure. Well, The Greatest Gift is about two couples, one who are desperate to have a baby and one who pretty much have decided before they meet, neither of them want to have children. And it's at the core, it's about egg donation in Australia. And it's a really hard book to talk about without giving too many spoilers away, but it explores how one goes about finding an egg donor. It's a lot about motherhood and parenthood just in general, about why you want to be a mother or why you don't want to be a mother. It came to me, as I said, just because someone out of the blue sent me a text message or a Facebook message asking me about sort of advice on writing. We were talking earlier, I get quite a few of those kind of messages, as I'm sure all authors do. This person was asking me about memoir writing and how they go about getting a memoir published, and I have no idea about memoir, I'm really sorry. What's memoir about? And she told me that she is one of Australia's highest, she's donated one of the pretty much the most eggs out of any of the egg donors in Australia. And I was like, oh, well, I have no idea about memoirs, but tell me more. So the book is sort of about... egg donation is the main sort of theme, and how, you know, things can go right and they can go wrong. So, yeah.
Have you seen the ads for the new TV show called Sisters?
I have. I've seen the ads, and that you sometimes have a family. I didn't know if it's about. Is it about that?
No. So it's about the opposite. So the sperm donor.
Because I've already said we've got a there's an online Facebook writing group. TV group for writers. And I must admit, I don't watch much TV, but I saw the. Someone posted about that and just the whole concept of sisters not knowing each other and who they came from, that grabbed me. So, yeah, I'll be definitely watching that.
The idea of motherhood and what it means, as a mother yourself, the process of writing this book, you would have done research and had to sort of taught people and sort of examine what it means to be a mother yourself. Did that sort of happen when you're sort of...
Yeah, well, I think it did make me think a lot more about probably, I guess, is lucky the word. Sometimes I don't think I'm very lucky when the three kids are fighting with each other. But I did have a relatively easy journey to motherhood. I didn't have any fertility issues, apart from a bit of preeclampsia in one of my pregnancies. I had never had to think about, you know, what would I do if I couldn't, if someone told me that, no, you'll never be a mother. I always pretty much wanted to have children for as long as I could remember. So it was, that was sort of, to me, it all worked out quite well. But I've had plenty of friends who it hasn't worked out so well, or they are the opposite and they don't have no maternal bones in their body, and they don't want children. And I thought it's always fascinating the reasons why someone wants children or why someone doesn't. But I guess with this book, I had to explore the what if. How far would you go if you weren't able to have a baby? But I also, the more interesting part of this for me was the reasons why people don't want to have children.
Yeah, I was interested in that.
Yeah, and now, having had three kids of my own, I look back and sometimes it's always the grass is always greener. I mean, I love my boys and, I would not have them. But I see friends who are now my age and they don't have children and they're, jetting around the world, travelling, and I think, oh, it's not that bad, And so I've then also, I'm 37, so I've got, friends that are around the same age. And the ones that have chosen not to have children are now at that stage in their life where people are saying to them, doctors even are saying, it's kind of, because the females I'm talking about, it's now or you might, miss the boat. And so I've got a particular friend who, she said, oh, well, maybe I should have children just because it's not something you want to regret down the track.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's a reason to have children either. And so, yeah, I've talked to a number of people while researching and while writing this book. One woman I talked to, she said, she's always knew she didn't want to have children, but people think it's a really selfish decision, and I actually think it's not a selfish decision because it's a huge thing, and I think a lot of people have children just because it's sort of what's expected and what they think, you've got to tick it off the list, and it's sort of, an achievement, whereas that's not the right reason. So it really made me sort of analyse, what are the right and wrong reasons for having children, and
Well, fiction is the best place to do that because you can argue with yourself.
It's true, and it made me think about things that I'd never had. Like, I honestly had never considered egg donation, and I came from quite a conservative religious background upbringing, and I would have thought probably it would have been considered that wasn't the way. If you have children, it was kind of like, if you're meant to have children, you will have them kind of thing. But now I've explored this whole egg donation and surrogacy thing, and I am totally, as I said before, it's probably just what I've been brought up thinking, but now I've developed my own feelings about it, and I think it's an amazing thing, and I wouldn't actually probably be adverse to donating my own eggs if I wasn't too old. So it's just, and hopefully through reading this book, other people will, think about their beliefs and stuff too.
Well, that's the great thing about fiction, and I often discuss it in these podcasts, is that not only is the author working out their own ideas on how they feel about certain subjects by writing a book and having strong characters argue with them.
Yeah, exactly.
But the readers, you can send send a book out there and you never know what community it's going to land in. And with your success, your books are getting everywhere around Australia. So, bringing a subject like this into a household that may have the same religious background that you came from, and with your great writing style, just getting him into the story and getting them rolling along, and then getting thinking.
Yeah.
What do I believe about this?
It's also interesting with just considering that is that my beliefs are not necessarily what's in the book for every, it's only two, there's basically two main characters. Well, there's four, but there's two women who are, part of the egg donation process, and they're only two people. They're not, that's not how egg donation always happens.
Yeah.
And I was a bit worried about one of the main characters, the egg donor, who does not want children. Her husband doesn't want children. And without giving too much away, I painted her husband as kind of not necessarily such a great guy. And I didn't want to paint in this book that, it's wrong if you don't want to have children, because I really don't believe that. But then with different characters I had to explore, I was trying to, show that everyone's got different beliefs. So there's a scene in there where Harper, the main character, is asking her friends and family, for their ideas about who she should choose as a recipient for the eggs. And that was a lot of fun to write. And it was also, I got that from talking to egg donors who had said, this is what people kind of, so I've hopefully given a glimpse of the, a glimpse of two people who with strong ideas, but also a glimpse of that there's just a huge range of feelings regarding this subject and it's not black and white.
How do you feel as a writer now that you've written, did you say 20?
21, that's my 21st book. One's only 10K, so 10,000 words, but that's the 21st book, yeah.
Well, just to give you an indication, I think it's Di Morrissey's 22nd book this year.
Yeah.
I think.
Wow, but she has written longer ones all the time. I mean, some of mine are, probably I've written 11, this is the 11th that is definitely full length.
In your writing journey, it seems to me that you always seem to be taking that little bit jump further, just to sort of see what you can do and what you're capable of doing. Do you feel that as a writer growing in strength?
To be honest, I feel like I'm getting worse.
Really?
Every time I sit down, I have so much doubt in my head. And I think all of my sort of steps into different kind of fiction have been organic. So I was obviously, I started publishing in rural romance mostly, and then I had an idea for a book which was definitely, it's about four sisters, it was the Patterson Girls, and it just, it was a women's fiction, it wasn't a rural romance. So I sort of took the leap into giving that a go, and that was a challenge, writing four female point of views, because they all wanted to have, you know, their own say, whereas before I'd just done two point of views at the most. So that was a challenge in making sure they all had enough page space, you know, sort of, and that they all had a character arc kind of throughout the story too.
It's but a nice time to juggle more
balls.
Yeah,
yeah, it is, juggling more balls, I guess, that, whereas I, but it wasn't something that I decided consciously to do. And obviously that went quite well, so then I had to keep, you know, wanted to keep writing in that genre as well.
It did quite well. It won the one book of the year at the Avis.
Yeah, yes, it did, thank you.
It did quite well.
Yeah. So, no, and this book, I guess it was, again, I've never used male point of views in my women's fiction books before. It's just always been female. So this one brought its own challenges, and I guess, yeah, it was more a contentious issue, although the previous one, The Art of Keeping Secrets, also had some kind of contentious issues in too. But none of it has been, oh, I'm going to stretch myself. It just kind of, the idea came to me, and I hoped that I could do it.
I noticed that you divide your, on your website, you divide the work up between rural romance and life lit. Mm-hmm. Is life lit a thing?
Well, I kind of made it a thing.
it's very helpful to a bookseller. I was going, yes, life lit,
well,
fantastic.
It was because, I can't take the credit. So my publicist for the Patterson Girls, she was talking about the whole thing, we were talking about women's fiction and how I have a number of male readers that read the rural romances, and I know they now read the women's fiction. I'm using inverted commas here because I don't like that term. I mean, I understand why we use it, but for one, I do have male readers, so it feels sort of, they have to read, if they're reading women's fiction, it feels, I have had one male reader attacked on Facebook to say that he shouldn't be reading any girly books and stuff like that. But the second thing is, say, especially my contemporary fiction that's not necessarily rural, I mean, even my rural romances, they deal with real life issues that affect all of us, you know, grief, parenthood, marriage, relationships, infidelity, all those sort of things. And it's not just a women's domain. So I understand why, you know, and also it's, so that's the second reason, but women's fiction is so wide. I mean,
so massive.
You know, we don't sagas in there. You don't use it?
And we can't, really, well, it's just too big.
Because it would be basically at least half the books.
That's why we changed our romance buzz to the life and love buzz, to try and include all these wonderful things that are going on in fiction, and to also step away from the connotations that these are women's books.
Book stories. So I think it's a hard thing because, we need to, there's just so many little genres in there, and how do you, I know you need sort of a name to sort of group them in, and so people, you know.
So where did Life Lit come from?
So my publicist at that time, she just thought, well, I was saying they're books about real life, you know, they're just everyday people like experiencing, you know, the issues that we all deal with in life on a day-to-day basis. And she just goes, Life Lit. And I was like, yes, that's
it. I always felt that back in the video days, the drama section was kind of, it's like, surely there's a better word for
than drama.
Than drama, because it's life. It's like, it's all about things that go on in
so I guess it separates, you know, in, I guess if we're using that broad women's fiction, you know, you have sort of time slip novels in there and, you know, family sagas, and whereas I feel like this is contemporary issue fiction kind of thing.
It's just kind
that
of
we
clunky.
All can relate to. But contemporary issue fiction sounds.
Yeah, it's just terrible.
It sounds awful.
It also takes up half the bookshelf trying to put the name on it.
Exactly.
Life Lit, bang, easy. So in Life Lit, I would be throwing in Moriarty, Di Morrissey, Fiona McIntosh.
Although she's a historical aspect,
yeah,
isn't
but they're,
it?
They're sort of,
I don't know. So it's like a hard. It's a. I see it. It's not black and white again. Nothing. I would say, particularly in Australian fiction, even Kylie Ladd. I'd say the recent one. Lisa Ireland has a book called The Shape of Us, which is about. I sort of feel Life Lit to me is more contemporary.
Your mate Fiona Palmer.
Recently. So. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard. It's really hard. I don't envy people having to classify books.
That's one of the big problems of booksellers is trying to keep up with them, because, you know, things do shift and change.
And I mean, Leanne Moriarty has been almost the domestic noir that was saying, was it?
Yeah, they try to stuff her in there.
But then I don't really think she... I think she's more the life lit.
Yeah, but, yeah,
we'll claim her for my, yeah, I think my so. New genre,
Big,
life
Big Little Lies was putting was winning crime awards.
Yeah, it's not. Nah, yeah, exactly. No, and she's definitely life lit.
There is a crime in it, but that's not...
I'd say Monica McEnany.
Yes,
life lit.
Absolutely. Yeah, there we go. We're getting them all out.
Yep.
Yeah. And looking at these kind of life lit books that you're doing, is this a transition out, or are you going to keep the two book thing?
Well, it's funny, I'm reading a rural romance at the moment, and I haven't read a rural romance for a long time. And I do love the whole small town dynamics. It's always been for me more about what happens in the town.
Do you call it town lit or something?
I did, but hey.
Wasn't there something about town or small town on your side as well?
I used to have Red Dust to Big Smoke when I was... That was my sort of tagline before, years ago. But yeah, I sort of like the dynamics of small town communities.
Oh, it's great for an author.
Yeah.
Everyone,
you know, everything, and it's like a microcosm of big...
Which is why Country Practice is so successful for so many years.
Exactly. So I do love all those sort of things. And so I want to write... I have slowed down because life's been a bit crazy the last year. So... And this was the idea that came next. So this way I've had I have two women's fiction in a row, probably. No, the next one's women's fiction as well that I'm writing now. Life Lit.
Rebranding.
The next one is Life Lit. So there's not a rural romance coming in between that, but I do want to write a sequel to, or sort of not a sequel, a linked book to Talk of the Town, which is my last rural romance. And I do love that genre. So I also like mixing it up. I think it sort of... when I'm writing a life lit, I think, oh my gosh, I so want to be writing rural romance, so much easier. Then when I'm writing rural romance, I think, oh, this is horrible, I want to be writing. So I do think it's good sort of mixing it up. Gives me a bit of a break between, you know, how...
And when you do stop writing, when we had Judy Nunn in here the other day, and she was saying, it's so lovely, I stop writing, and there's a little period between my new book and the next book, and I just go out on a reading binge.
Yep.
And have you been reading anything that you just like, oh, I can't believe that's out there?
So well, cool. I love reading crime books. As I said, I haven't read a rural for a while, and I do read in the life lit genre quite a lot, but I actually really like reading crime when I'm writing and when I'm not, because I find I don't analyse that so much. I don't sit there going, oh my gosh, it's so much better than me, or it's so much, you know, how did they do that? Or I'm not trying to take it apart to work stuff out. So I really like reading crime. I'm just trying to think what I've read. Like, I mean, I've read the ones that everyone's
read
recently. And... Yeah, I've read The Dry. I haven't read Force of Nature. I've read, you know, The Dark Light. I've read Candace Fox's last one. I haven't read with James Patterson. I read Michael Robotham. So I actually really like reading that kind of stuff when I'm...
So that doesn't interrupt? Or doesn't get caught up in your world?
I mean, I've always been... I know some writers don't read while they're writing. Mm. I'm not like that. I need to read... I don't read as much as I would like, but I read every day, you know, so that's before bed, it's my little reading time. And I've never found, if I'm reading, you know, a rural romance and writing a rural romance, that it affects me.
Yeah.
But I know that happens to a lot of writers. But I just find, more and more that I do like reading outside the genre, because I think it's not the writing style that affects me, but just there's so many books out there, and, you know, there's so little ideas, and how many, it's like two main stories or something. Yeah. So I find if I'm reading something completely different, I'm not internalising the worry and anxious so much that I'm writing the same as somebody else, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that is part of the problem people face if they're reading something similar to their own work. Did I come up with that, or was that from the book?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I need sort of clarity. I'm with you. I'm reading the whole way through. I feel like if I'm not putting stuff in, how can stuff come out?
And I think that's true. I mean, who was I talking to or listening to recently? I think it may have been Rachel Herron, who's had quite a few books in Australia as well, but she's a US writer, and she sent an email, a newsletter out recently, and it was about how we really, as writers, should be reading more than we're writing.
Yeah.
And I really think that's the case. And that's something I fail on daily basis.
Sometimes writers will only read non-fiction while they're actually in the middle of writing their novel.
Yeah.
And that keeps them...
And that gives you ideas and stuff.
Yeah, it gives you ideas. Kind of and especially if you're reading in the area that you're writing about.
I need to be writing. I also think... I wish I watched more TV, but I don't know how people fit it in their day.
It's sometimes you watch people on Twitter and things, and I go, how many hours do you have?
I know. I don't understand. I think I'm wasting too much time on Facebook. I don't know, because I don't seem to have time to read. I don't have time to watch TV. I don't do housework, so I don't know what I'm...
So we have this book, which is a perfect holiday read, but also a great gift for those who already
hopefully
love.
It's the greatest gift for Christmas.
It's the greatest gift. It's already written on the book. It's written on the book. Thank you, Rachel, for coming in and talking to us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
And you can get hold of all of Rachel's books on booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.